Podcast eines Fotoproduzenten.
Hello to our latest episode of Podcast eines Fotoproduzenten. Today we're gonna talk in English because my guest today is Julie Francoeur.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay, introduce yourself so people who don't know you get a better understanding of where you come from and what you're doing now. So, before we start digging into the details.
Yeah, perfect. Well, first, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
So my name is Julie, as you said. I'm from Montreal. I've been doing stock photography for about 5 years now. Started doing more of a classic stock, and now more trying to do a documentary-inspired lifestyle photography. So a bit more candid and less saturated, I'd say. More play with light. Yeah.
Okay. You are one of the, not few, but there's not so much full-time stock photographers out there. A lot of people do it part-time or as a hobby. Yeah. So you are one of the people who are fully engaged in stock photography.
Yeah, working my way there. I just recently
let's
got
Let's talk about
to...
how that happened. When was your first experience with photography and stuff like that?
Well, I've always loved photography. I used to do it in high school and in college, but I never imagined that it could be a career. So it was just a hobby, but it was something that I really, really liked. Then I completely put it away. I still kept a bit of an artistic side. I ended up in industrial design instead. So I worked for Johnson & Johnson for a few years, but I missed the fact that I could have freedom, that it was a big structure, so I definitely was looking for something more free spirit in my life and free flowing, where I could make my own time and put my own energy into my work.
Okay, when was the first time you earned money or you sold?
Yeah.
Or you sold your first photograph.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, well, I first got introduced to stock photography because my ex-boyfriend at the time was a semi-professional photographer. So I was like, as a couple, I was like, how can we make this? And
he was already doing stock or
no,
just
he
photography?
Wasn't. So I thought, okay, so with his skills, mm-hmm. how can we as a couple could do a bit of art direction and everything? So how can we figure something out so we have a bit of money? So that's how I got familiar with it. And when things didn't work out in the end, then I already knew about a few stock photography blogs, including at that point, Yuri Arkers, that had the photography bootcamp in Cape Town. So I was selected to attend the bootcamp and made it in the finalists. So that was my first introduction to the world of stock photography.
It was like 20 people out of 120?
Something like 16 or 18 out of 120, exactly.
So you're in the top level
I was
already there.
Yeah, exactly. I came in top five with no experience, so I hadn't really touched much of a camera. It was like a third hand T1i with a nifty 50, like a $100 lens. Yeah. And there's some people that came to the boot camp with like $20,000 worth of equipment, the whole big thing. And I just got there, and I think I'm a hard worker, I'm creative, and I put a lot of energy into what I do. And I think that's what carried me to be in the top five. So it was a huge honor.
So that's a good proof that equipment is not everything.
Exactly. It's not about the equipment. Like, equipment can help, but it's not about the equipment in the end.
Do you remember some of the tasks or exercises you had to do? So
at the end, we were given three different assignments that you had to choose one. And just me being me, I did two. I think I was the only one who did two. So you had to shoot, in my assignments, I had to shoot either cricket, the sport, which I knew nothing about. And I was not from Cape Town. I didn't know any cricket people. So I was like, okay, well, that's not one for me. A flower shop. And I was lucky because I went and met with the owner of the most beautiful flower shop in Cape Town and was able to shoot there. So that was really great. And then I think what made me stand out a little bit, I had an assignment that was babies. So I knew no one in Cape Town, like you have to understand, I'm from Montreal, so I'm a complete tourist. So I just asked a furniture store if I could have people come in and take pictures on their beautiful furniture. And I just went around the mall and took appointments. So I had four or five people, mothers with their babies, that came in and got some portraits taken. And that's that thing, that's what made it.
So you did some street recruiting?
Yeah, like completely ninja style.
And after like winning the competition, you had the internship with People Images?
Yeah, exactly. So we worked with the company. I was with them about 9 months, 6 months in Cape Town and 3 months in Denmark when summer was in Denmark and not in Cape Town anymore. And so we learned a lot through working. So it was definitely a hands-on experience where you absorbed a lot by doing, and as opposed to formal classes.
So you were thrown into the water.
And so, okay, so here, there's a room full of people, go shoot business. So it was kind of like, okay, sink or swim, and what do I do with this? So you had to be able to roll with, like I'd say, roll with the punches, and that's, I guess, one of my strengths.
And when you think back, what were the key points you took or you gained there, experience?
I think I got a lot, like through doing industrial design in the past, I was close to marketing, so I'd done some purchasing, and I think I came in with an understanding of what a buyer might want. So whenever I'd see a situation, I'd be able to have a look at the situation as a photographer, but also a buyer. And I think that really helped me to be able to understand right away framing for copy space, and because then suddenly you feel it, you see it, and I think some of the key points, and also just seeing such a, like People Images is a huge company, and I have a lot of respect for the style that they've been putting through, but like that's it. When you have about 100 people, you have a team of keywording, a team of retoucher, a team of uploaders, and it was nice to see the machine, although when I came out of that, I had to really learn that. I didn't learn keywording and the whole workflow.
Because other parts of the team
exactly. So
did
I was,
that for you.
That's it. I was photography. So I learned photography, some retouching. But when I came out, that's it. Like I was glad that I had the exposure and a general understanding. But there was a lot of work too that I had to do on my side.
And the images you took during the internship landed on People Images.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
People can buy there.
Yeah, exactly. My portfolio is still there.
Okay. Yeah. Can they search by name?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll be able to provide a link. That might be easier.
we can check. Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
Exactly.
If we have some. Okay, so then you got back to Montreal after the internship. At what year was that?
That must have been then something like the end of 2013, I would say.
And what did you...
2012, like... I'm big on dates. That's not my strong
problem.
Point.
Yeah. And you kept shooting there?
Well, first I tried to do family photography until I realized that then again you were chained to contract and you had to be marketing so hard. And when there was a period where you don't have contracts coming, then you have no money coming. Mm. So then that's it. When I soon realized that I definitely wanted to do stock photography as my main job and do contracts on the side. But it was like I got back into it, but it took me a lot of time to fully understand how much of a workflow it is. So I'd say it took me a good year and a half, 2 years before I actually got serious and really started uploading, and not just kind of like 12 images, 20 images. And as soon as I did that, then suddenly revenues start going up, and it was definitely worth putting in the time for that.
And when you say uploading, what agencies did you upload? Which one did you choose first?
I started with the classic, like the big three would be iStock, Folia, Shutterstock. But I have also really, really enjoyed, like I call it my sanity saver. I've worked a lot with Stock Submitter, where you could submit about 10 images for, it's not more expensive, it's not more complicated, you just put your model releases once and then you can send it to a really wide array of agencies. So for a while I was submitting to 10, 11, now there's some that I've removed because it was, like workflow-wise it wasn't working. I think I'm with about 8 or 9 agencies now.
And which ones are your top earners? Started by earnings.
Yeah, definitely my top one would be iStock. I know a lot of people have had bad experiences, and for me, strangely, it's been going up and up and up. And especially since now it's affiliated with Getty, even though I'm not exclusive, so that's made a huge difference.
How much images you have at iStock?
iStock, I'd say about 2,500. Okay. Yeah, numbers not my strong suit. So.
Okay,
about that.
And how many have been transferred to Getty? Do you know that?
I'm not sure exactly. It's still a bit mysterious how they are licensed through Getty. I don't have the answers. I'm just glad they are. Okay. It's really nice once in a while to get an $80 commission as opposed to a 1 cent commission.
Okay.
It feels kind of nice as a photographer.
Okay, and your second and third agencies?
Yeah. So second would be Fotolia, and the third one Shutterstock.
Okay. Yeah. And at least from my experience, after that it falls down very quickly, or are the others running close behind?
Oh no, like definitely I'd say iStock is about half to two-thirds, I would say it depends, and Shutterstock is nice, but I don't have also like exactly the same amount of images there, so it's not a fair comparison.
Okay, you said that you started with a classic stock look,
yeah,
and now have a more documentary inspired photography look. What's the difference for you?
Well, for me, when I came out of People Images, I had grown accustomed to shooting like a bit of studio, like really big smiles and everything like that, and like I knew how to do that, but I always felt a little bit not quite like I wasn't loving it. And at one point I decided, okay, it's gonna be fine. I've made some rules for myself that I follow. Like, I don't enjoy shooting thumbs up. I don't shoot thumbs up because if I did during a shoot, I feel icky. It doesn't feel
fun. It's funny because it's one of my best sellers.
No, for a lot of people it works, but for me, every time I would do that, I'd feel like kind of like apologetic. And at one point I said, you know what? It's okay for me to do things in my own way. If I put myself in a position where I'm in the middle of a shoot and I'm not enjoying what I shoot, then everything's off. So it takes me a while to get back into it, so I don't do it. I don't really do handshake. There might be, if you look, there might be one or two in my portfolio because I tried and I was like, that's not what I love to shoot.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I always make like fun out of it. I think nobody in real life would do that. So do it as cheesy as you can because it's fun anyway. And then it gets the right expression.
It works as a symbol and everyone will recognize that. So I totally understand. I'm sure like I'd make money if I did it, but I've made the choice. Like, if I want to feel right about doing stock photography, I also have to feel like I have respect for what I do, and that's it. My goal was always to do it more on the artistic side. I'm definitely more, I describe myself as a third businesswoman, a third artist, and a third backpacking hippie. So for me, it's about the freedom, it's about the art, and if I make money, that's great, but I'm not there to make a big production and end up in a 9-to-5 job again. So that's definitely more about the freedom for me.
So right now you're doing full-time stock photography?
Yeah, that's it. So I did the classic stock, and it definitely helped to raise the ground for, you know, a monthly income that supports a bit of artistic freedom. But I'd say in the last year to maybe 9 months to a year, I've definitely been shooting more candid, less looking at the camera. I'm really enjoying some of the inspiration that we're seeing right now, the Stocksy, some of the trends that we're seeing on Getty. I love looking at those reports. For me, like, they're
the
really
creative briefs, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. But every year at the, like, now we're gonna be in January soon. We're gonna get all of the trends for the year. Sometimes they come up with things that are super abstract, but it's so beautiful. And for me, if I get that as a project, I can go free with it, and if it works, it's great. If it doesn't work, well, the only thing I've done is something beautiful.
Okay. And How much money do you earn roughly per yeah. month with how many images?
Yeah, for me, like this in the last year, I was really happy that I hit the point where I make the same salary now working part-time as I did as industrial designer. So that's about just about 4,000 US a month.
Okay. Yeah. And that's with enough. How many images?
Yeah, for I'd say about 2,500.
Okay. And do you still work part-time for Johnson & Johnson?
No. That was like in the past. Now I just work part-time because I enjoy having free time, and it takes a lot of work and energy starting a business. So now I'm taking a bit of time off so I can have energy to for the next wave.
Okay. And let's do some geek talk.
Yeah, sure.
Technical stuff.
Yeah.
What camera did you start it with? What camera are you shooting now?
Well, I have to say, like, we got spoiled of people images. We were shooting with the D800E, and it's butter. Like, the sensor is just, there's no grain. There's so much freedom with the images that when I came back, I got the D800. Now I have the D810. I fell in love with the Sigma Art 1.4, the 35 1.4. Yeah. I rented it a few times and it was just, no, that's it. Like,
that's your favorite lens.
Yeah, I'd say now I must shoot 85% of my stuff with it. It's just
85% 35 millimeter.
Sorry?
85% yeah, exactly. Okay. It's like your trademark look.
Yeah, it's just like there's such an ease, and it's something to, like, I love the closeness because you can be close to model and just talk. You don't have to scream across the room like with an 85 where you try to get a shot. Like, I love the bouquet of it, but I find just being an experience of a shoot, it feels a bit different, simply.
And do you use flash or only natural light, or...?
I do. Usually I will work with just a bit of added light, mostly though in a way that's super unscientific. Like, I'll just bounce on a neutral wall just to add a bit of fill, but mostly it's natural light. Like, it starts with natural light and it's just then helping it a little bit to, like, open up the shadows that way.
Okay. Do you use studio lights or speed lights?
No, I don't. I do have the Einsteins that I've enjoyed working, but they're still so powerful that sometimes it's not easy to work with them.
Like,
just
too much
they have a low output, but it's still sometimes too much. So I've also sometimes bring a flash and I'll decide on the spot what works well.
Okay. And when you retouch the images, there's an interesting part on your website. You say you only work with real bodies.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah. For me, I find it super important to portray the world as it is. I think it's very important. People are looking for that. They're looking to relate to the image. And I think having some real people that are not a size 2 all the time, not everyone is a size 2, not everyone has perfect teeth, not everyone has blonde long hair. So, like, for me, I like casting actors, real people, and I try to keep it authentic. That's definitely something that
is there a limit to when would you say this person is underweight?
Oh, definitely. Like, there is, for me, I like, it has to be, for me, it's a visual thing, like, but like, I wouldn't work with a model that is underweight. Okay. I very much, like, I saw that in France, for example, on the runway, and I thought that was a great trend, and I don't want that pressure on people.
Okay. And that, let's say that idea moves on to your retouching. You have the statement on your site that you do ethical retouching.
Yeah.
So what do you remove and what keeps or what stays in the image?
Like, I find in stock photography, you can't say that an image is unretouched. As soon as you have a logo, it has to be retouched. Let's call it that. So I can't say my images are unretouched. That's not fair to say. But I don't liquefy bodies. A body is a body. It doesn't need to be changed. It's perfect the way it is. And for retouching, I try to remove things that are temporary. So, for example, if there's a bit of mascara that's smudged, then that's temporary.
Yeah.
That I will remove. If someone has a pimple that day there, that's temporary. That's not part of who they are. There's a hair in the face, that's temporary. Yeah, but I don't remove wrinkles, I don't remove, you know, like teeth that are like, have one of my favorite models, I just love her so much. Her name is Ronnie, so she might hear, she might recognize herself, she's from Montreal. But she's just like a great girl with a great energy, and she has a beautiful gap in her teeth. And every time she smiles, like you just, it's so expressive. Why would I try to fix that? That's what makes her charm, so that's it. I like that. I hope that in my shoots, things look just a little bit imperfect, so that it feels real.
And that's one of my favorite questions. What makes the perfect stock model for you? What you look for in a model that you want to shoot?
There is something really powerful about nonverbal. And what happens is that when you can get real people that get along, people that are nice, some people just are naturally bubbly and get along, and like, then we have a great time. And it just shows in the images. There's nothing I could do to fake that. There's sometimes I work with models that had a really great smile, but where the energy was off. They were a little bit snob or like, you know, not at ease. And in all the pictures, you could see the model next to them moving away. There's nothing you can do to fake that. Yeah. So what you have to do is create a really nice environment, and then everyone's super at ease. People will have like the real laughs, like, you know, the ones where you can tell like from the heart, like you can't fake that.
Yeah.
So that to me is the perfect shoot.
Do you have a trick to create this perfect environment?
I'm very protective of the energy on set. So it's not about, for a while I did like bigger production. I found it was just like the pressure of trying to make money to refund the shoot was so much that now I prefer doing smaller production because we have snacks together, we laugh together. And for me, I usually come out of a shoot with just such a love for the energy that's there. And to me, that is key. Because I could bring that, I could capture that. I haven't found a way for myself to fake that. So,
what's a smaller production for you? How many people?
Yeah. I'm very lucky. We have a great space, a great system in North America. I think it's starting too in London, a few places. It's called Breather. So I've been renting a space. It's kind of like a space for meetings that you could rent. And for example, that's $20 an hour. So get there. Put a few people together. My ideal team is about 3 to 4 models, and then maybe one helper or two. That's for me, that's my comfort level. And that's it. So we'll do about 4 or 5 hours. We'll have snack together. We'll laugh a whole, like, we'll be laughing the whole time. And then I come back. And that's for me to be a bit strategic and say, for example, okay, in that space, I have a whiteboard. How am I going to make a whiteboard interesting? I have a couch. Okay, so what could I do that? Like, so for example, in one of my last shoots, there was one of the girls that I put in a workout outfit, and then we did yoga because it looked like a home, and then we had her change, and then we did business. So just to find the environment and what can I put in there that would feel natural, and I'd rather do many small shoots than burn out a team out of a 12-hour shoot, for example.
And how many images you get out of a 4 to 5 hours shooting?
Ooh, that will vary on how many themes I've done, but usually I could get about 50 to 100 per hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when they're on the computer, what software do you use to do the raw conversion, the retouching and stuff?
I tried Lightroom, and it's so practical and everything. But I came back to Capture One. It's just the colors are amazing. Since I got back into Capture One, I'm loving the colors again. I was having a hard time in Lightroom. Things were like a bit more pastel, and I like the brown, the browns, the golden depth that you could get in Capture One. So, yeah.
And the retouching, you do Photoshop or?
Yeah, Photoshop. Okay. I do part of the retouching. That's one thing though that I outsource a little bit too, because it gets too time consuming and yeah.
And do you have a permanent person, or you outsource it to India, or?
No, I have a permanent person.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for uploading, you use a stock submitter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And before that, the keywording, you do yourself, or?
I've been doing it myself. That's it. Like, I think I might be at the point where if I want to keep the freedom and have like the ideal creative side, I'll probably need to find like a team or like a bit of a way to outsource because it does take time, but I've also enjoyed it. Sometimes I'll just put something on
Netflix. You enjoyed it?
Well, you know...
You enjoyed it? Did I hear that correctly?
You know, like, to me, it's kind of like, there's some funny things. Like, it just keeps me too aware of what I do. For example, like, one point, like, that's a really funny story. So I'm French, originally, I'm French-Canadian. So there's sometimes a word that I might not quite know perfectly. So at one point, I misspelled millennial. And do you want to know what? I got so many sales on that because that...
All other people misspelled it as well.
That is the common way of misspelled millennial. So everyone that was typing a misspelled word was buying my images because they couldn't find the rightly spelled. So, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, have a sense of humor about it. But I found like, yeah, like I've enjoyed in a way going back to Shutterstock and see, okay, so this image sold with this keyword. And I'm not saying that I will do it all the time, but I think it's a good learning experience to do it at least for a while. And that's it. I'll just put like a movie on Netflix and just kind of do a couple of hours here and there. And it hasn't been so painful so far.
Okay. Well, it was one of my dreadest parts of the work, so I'm happy to.
I can see. Also.
But when you say the misspelling, I had that experience too, that there are some words people more often misspell than spell correctly. In Germany, for example, it's Silvester, New Year's Eve. And so you have to have the wrong spelling in your keyword, otherwise you won't get sales.
But see, that's it. You need to find someone who's really like, if you're outsourcing to someone, you need to find someone who's really sharp about those things and will get like, so yeah, it's, I find like it's a pretty funny, interesting / funny world, the keyboarding.
Yeah. And do you do only on location shootings or do you do studio shootings as
well? I don't really do studio. That's it. I'm looking maybe to do more things, more things at home, sometimes in winter time. As people might know, in Canada, we get really rough winters, so it's not like if there's any light. I've enjoyed doing a few winter shoots in the snow, but except for that, I'd rather not put my snowsuit and 15 layers of glove and carry my stuff in the snow. So I might try to see, but not a classic studio, more kind of a colorful background and like experimental.
And so, do you have favorite props that you use? Most likely.
I love putting things in front of my camera.
I noticed that. Yeah. Something unsharp in front.
I love that. And it's really funny because anytime I'm on shoot, like people see me and I've got like weird gift bows and like plexiglass sheets and all sorts of weird things. People are like, what the hell are you doing? Or Christmas lights. And I find it just has like a really, gives it depth. But I'm also like, I love glasses. So for me, I think that's one of the things that I think I've enjoyed most is as a prop is putting glasses on people. Because I think it gives a real level of modern feel.
Makes him look smarter or
no, like you put a pair of funky glasses on a beautiful girl and she'll look trendy, she'll look hip, she'll look edgy. As if you remove that, she just looks sweet and cute, and you can really change, I find, the expression.
Yeah, I had one of these models as well without glasses. She just looks normal, but with glasses she looks like a high fashion model.
Yeah,
totally
exactly
strange.
So okay.
Let me check my questions. Yeah, I have some it's kind of like a little game I try to introduce into my podcast. I have two pairs of words, like kind of opposites, and you just have to snap out of your mind what's that's not the right expression. It just from the top of your mind what comes into your head when you hear these. Like where you are leaning to or something.
Okay.
An obvious one, but I want to include it, RAW or JPEG?
RAW.
Okay. Autofocus or manual focus?
Autofocus. At 1.4, autofocus.
Okay. Canon or Nikon?
Nikon, but both are really, really good. And I have a Sony too, so I'm not there.
Flash or available light?
Available light.
Okay. Studio or on location?
On location.
Okay. Zoom or fixed lens?
Fixed lens all the time.
White angle or tele?
More towards the wide angle, I'd say. Mm. But I like both.
Art or advertising?
Right in the middle, this one. Because art, you know what? Advertisers want something artful. It could be commercial and artful. So I'm not giving you an answer on either side on this one.
Okay. Analog or digital?
Digital.
Okay. Smartphone or DSLR?
DSLR.
Okay, that's done.
That's Thank it.
You. And we have, if I'm correctly, you said in high school you did analog?
Yeah. And I had my mother's...
When was the transition?
Oh, I stopped doing photography. I was playing, like, we had a dark room in high school. Yeah. So I'd take my mom's camera that had the broken light meter. So I just play and experiment. And I loved being in the black room. Like, it was in the dark room. I could lose track of time. I could be there 3 hours and not know when I got there and what time it was when I came out. I loved it. And then I completely stopped with photography. I didn't understand the basics of exposure, so I found it so frustrating to see a beautiful scene and not being able to capture. I completely gave up until that's it. Like, I was exposed to it again through my boyfriend at the time and the boot camp.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you also have a Facebook page,
yeah.
You have an Instagram account,
yeah.
You have a Pinterest site,
yeah.
And how much value you put in the marketing, or what's your take on it?
That's a hard one. It must be that I'm 38. I'm a bit more, not private, but I don't believe that everyone should see my cappuccino.
Yeah.
So I will put images that I'm proud of, and I'm learning to be a bit more disciplined about social media. And it's also, we are in a market where we're not hunting for clients. It's a different way of looking at social media. So I've been seeing it more as a portfolio showcase than anything else for me.
Okay. And what's your, it's two different things. What's your favorite shooting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Favorite
one?
Shooting? Well, candid and like smaller session. Definitely like...
No, I mean from like a concrete example, like a special location or a special... Like one of the shootings in the past you had, what's
okay.
your favorite?
Well, I have a good example of that. Earlier this summer, I went on a photo road trip with a friend of mine who also is great in front of the camera and like also a photography assistant. So I've got the perfect road trip partner, right?
Where did you go?
We went through a bit of the United States and Quebec region, and I just took my lifestyle photography on the road. So I left with, I want to say 25 mini ideas for shoot plan. Just kind of like, okay, I know I'm going to be going by some windmills. So what can I do with windmills? So okay, I'm going to be places where there's going to be lakes and swamps. What can I do with the lake? So I just took that and we just hopped from one place to another. So over 12 days, we just go and I got access to beautiful like microbreweries and like in smaller regions where they don't have tons of photographers coming and contacting them. So, and a coffee roaster, things like that. Some of my family have beautiful land, so did like some chicken farming, like really rustic chicken farming over there. So I did like, that's it, a road trip, and came back with 17 mini shoots. And I'm still processing that because one of my problems is I tend to be very successful in producing to the point where I come back and I'm like, what do I do with all of this? So that's what I'm working on right now. That's my project for the fall. But see, that was a beautiful project. And my goal would be to do a lot more traveling like that and shooting in between. And so that freedom and business can really just, the one win-win.
What would you say is your bottleneck in the whole workflow?
I procrastinate by doing creative projects. So what happened is that if, for example, I'm getting better, in the past that has been my huge bottleneck. So I'd feel really frustrated with the whole keywording, the whole process. And then I'd say, oh, well, I'm going to do something great. I'm going to do a shoot. That's my business, right? And then I'd pile up images. So I think I still need to be able to, that's it, like put definite times where I do bigger chunk of like the boring time, a boring task, like or down to earth task, like the keywording, the submitting, and then definitely better at it, but still not perfect. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And when you were at the road trip and you contacted the different locations,
yeah.
How does it work? You just walk in and say hi?
You need to contact the people in advance. Like, yeah. They need to see your website. The proof is in the pudding. If you have beautiful images, well, and I say, like, hey, I'll shoot for free. Do you want to sign a release? Because I'll come in with the model. Yeah, I'd call them ahead and explain to them why I'm doing it for free, because, like, I'm not Prince of Nigeria here. Like, you know, like, everyone's a bit skeptical. Why are you doing it for free? Yeah. So I explain to them, and that's it. Some of them... It worked for pretty much everyone I contacted, so I was quite lucky. And it was a beautiful road trip, but I came back with a lot of homework, so...
Okay. And what was your most successful shoot so far, in terms of revenue?
Revenue? A 12-hour day where we did, like, two types of business and then some fitness in the park. For a while, I was doing much bigger productions, and... they're fun, but I just felt completely exhausted afterwards. So, like, now I prefer to do three smaller sessions.
But
it still works.
The higher
exactly.
Production is lucrative.
The business will always work. Like, in classic business as well as fun business, younger business. So, when I have the opportunity, I'll just do a change of wardrobe, change of props, and it's easy to just do that little change. And then you shoot both corporate business, and then you'll do something creative. So... that's what I try to do usually, shoot a bit of both in one day.
And where do you source your models? Where do you get your models from?
A lot of them are my friends or like ex-co-workers, things like that. I've met some models on Model Mayhem too, although that's a bit more tricky, I think.
Just for the German listeners, yeah. Model Mayhem is like a model Kartei in Germany.
Yeah. Okay. Like, I think one of the great things that I have as an advantage is that I'm a woman. So models will trust me on a gut level much faster, because like on sites like what you're saying or Model Mayhem, there's a lot of guys that might not be models. Tell me horror stories all the time.
Like
so,
the old photographers who want to see young.
Yeah, exactly. Women that got, like, you know, stuff put into their drinks. So like some really terrible stories. So for me, coming as a woman. And even scouting location, I think I just look like a friendly face, and I don't look like I'm going to bring in a team. I look kind of, not innocent, but unintrusive, and then then the third of businesswoman kicks in, and then I'll bring a production, and I'll make it happen, and I'll run a big show. Like, sometimes I've run like a team of like 16 people while doing the photography, so I love those big projects, but... yeah, so sometimes smaller too.
Do you source models from the locations as well?
Sometimes.
People work there?
Sometimes. Although, I usually not.
No.
Like, I'd say sometimes I will, but I find it's easier to work with someone who has a natural ease. I'm looking more and more to work with people in environment. Mm. So, like, the real people there. But I find it has to be... sometimes it could take a long time to get warmed up for the people to understand that it's just like, no, just be relaxed. Like, no, don't pose or something like that.
I try to make it a goal that when I'm on location to always have one person that works there or is very familiar
with it
because so they know everything. They know what's common and what's not, what's supposed to be done and stuff. So more like a coach who says, okay. Like, for example, in a dentist office, they know how to hold all the tools.
Do you use them as models, or do they have them like sometime as around you to help?
If possible, I try to use them as models if they look stock-like.
Yeah.
And if not, I just ask if they want to like be a coach and just stand by my side and shout, stop. That's not how we would do it.
Like I use people, let's say, like that as coach. Like I'll have them next to me and say, oh, how do you use this tool? Like, what's a proper way of holding it? Yeah. That, but models, not so far, but that's definitely something that I'd like to move towards.
Okay. Yeah. And looking back, what would you say would be a mistake or error you would have loved to avoid in retro perspective?
I don't feel like I made mistakes. I think, though, that in the beginning, I used to be a lot tougher on myself, and that was not necessarily very productive, I think.
What do you mean by tougher?
For me, that's it. Like, I'm just a little bit of a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. So for me to compete with, like the business world, it's put a pressure at first that was really hard for me. So it's taken a bit of time, and that's probably the thing in my life that has changed me so the most, to be a business owner, because it's all on you. You're responsible for everything. So you can't hide behind, oh, it's the company's fault, or, oh, like, this is not. Like, this is, you run your own show. So you have to take responsibility for everything. And it takes time. You can't just snap into that. I don't come from a business background. No one in my family is in business. I am out of, like, my extended family. I'm one of the only ones who's in business. So it really, like, it was a lot of learning experience. So I wish I'd given myself a bit more free time and patience. So,
yeah. You mentioned the 4-Hour Work Week book that inspired you.
Yeah.
By Tim Ferriss.
Yeah. So I read that when I was in my 20s, and it hit me too, just when I was at a corporate job where there was no freedom, there was no wiggle room, and that's it. So it hit me like that had to be key for me. So that's why I'm attracted to photography, to stock photography, because of the freedom, because of the fact that you could be mobile. You could take a week off when you're feeling like you need a week off. And so the freedom was definitely, and the idea of passive income was definitely key in the reason why I chose this career.
But until you found out that it's not passive after all, because you still have to work.
You do, but it's, you know what, I wish more artists did stock photography, because the calm that you have and the creativity that you gain back when your rent is paid, the moment when your rent is paid, you're able to be creative and to think again. And to me, this is a gift that, like, all artists should have a bit of that, just to get your brain back. So yeah, to me, that's, you still have to work, but I do it out of passion, not because I have to.
And speaking of giving back, there's a Compassionate Eye Foundation that you work with. What's that all about?
So it's a foundation started by a stock photographer. The name escapes me, sorry. But what the principle is, so me being part of it, like, there's stock photographers that will give their time for free. So we get a shoot together, we shoot it, and then we give the copyright to the foundation. So I'm not paid. Most of the people on the shoot are volunteer, like makeup artists sometimes. There's people that are being paid a little bit, but it's really just a volunteer effort. We're like just putting all our energy together to give them a shoot. And then the royalty goes to that foundation. I've been doing it for the past 5 years, and they've earned through Getty, like the images are distributed to Getty, but over $1 million, and they get like funds for a health project, like small loans in developing countries, education. So it's a beautiful cause. And I've been really lucky to be able to work with art directors. They're based in London. And so, like, it's a really beautiful team to produce quality content.
So if I understand correctly, it's basically like a team of photographers who put their images in a separate account,
exactly.
And all the money from that account, the images that get sold, are for the charity cause.
Exactly. So I've been doing it for 5 years now, and it's one of my tradition. I couldn't imagine a year without a Compassionate Eye shoot.
Okay, how many shoots you do per year?
Oh, there's a year I did two. Most of the time it is one. Like, they're usually time around the beginning of the summer. They call it the solstice shoot.
Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier about second shooters.
Yeah.
You use a second shooter every time or sometimes?
No. It will depend on the size of the production. On bigger production, I find it's really key to have a second shooter, because if you're investing a bit more, it's important to be able to have that balance where you get a variety. But yeah.
And he's not in the way or taking the attention away from the models?
I have two different techniques to work with a second photographer. So one is, if the person's kind of quick on their toes, to put them as almost like a candid. So I might direct the models a bit more and say, okay, do point this, look at me this way, a smile, look away. And then the other person's just going to be like floating around and taking a different angle. So they know that they have to say somewhere around me, so they're not in the way. So it's almost kind of like a ninja, documentary style. Like, the other way is, if I have a bigger team, then if I have, let's say, 4 or 5 models, I might separate and say, okay, here, I'll give you this model. You could do some portraits. You could maybe take the rest of the group in the background a little bit. But they usually working with shallow depth of field. So it's just the idea of a team in the background. And if I'm there, I could be kind of hidden or, I mean, yeah, exactly. Like somewhere, like we're disguised a little bit.
Okay. And is there some accessoires or gadgets you bought you really love or you really just don't use? What's your, do you have some favorites there?
Look, when you mean gadget, you mean what?
Like tripods or fancy lights or like, you know, all these little gadgets.
There's a lot of stuff that I got that I really don't use as much as I should. I've used the Einstein, but that's it. Thinking back, they're too powerful. So, you know, this is not, that wasn't necessarily the best use because I don't do studio. And when I bought them, I wasn't sure if I was going to do studio or not. So it made sense at the time. Now, not so much. If I had to buy, I'd probably get some continuous light because I find I'm the natural light photographer. So for me, there's a read that's much more direct and much more spontaneous than with strobes. And there's lenses, like I had a micro lens that I don't use much, so that's part two, like mastering the gear acquiring syndrome, the gas as we call it in the photography blogs, is part of a challenge too. So it's not about the gear, it's not just about the gear.
Yeah. And on your side you state that you're planning in the future photography workshops.
Yeah.
Is it like general photography or aimed at stock photography?
I want to, I'd like to aim it at stock photography, but not, but for artists. I really am a firm believer that artists shouldn't starve like that. They should be able to pay their rent and then after that decide what projects they want to do. So I'd like to be able to tell people, okay, so you want to do landscape photography. How can you license that? Do you do portrait? Okay, sure. There's a way to license portrait. Do you do street photography? There's a way to do street photography where you could license it. But I think people don't quite realize how wide the world of stock photography is. And I think if they realize, they could see the opportunity. And for an artist, even if you make $500 a month, it changes completely. Like the type of freedom, like if you have one side job as opposed to having two side jobs and trying to be a photographer, like it changes everything for your life. So that to me is the goal. And I'm not sure if I, by targeting artists, if I'm going to make a lot of money from it. And that's not the point. I do things from the heart and that's it. That's the reason why I want to do it.
Okay. And what's your plans for your own stock photography in the future, where you want to head?
Ideally, I'd like to be able to have someone to help me a little bit, maybe as a business manager in a flexible way. Like again, like the goal is not to be in a 9-to-5. There's, I think more and more there's ways to manage a business that doesn't have to be on a fixed schedule. So I'm exploring all of that. And so I could be more creative. And if I had a support team, then I could say, okay, let's go crazy with creativity. Let's do road trips. Let's go there. I know I'll have the support to be able to make things roll. It won't fall on me, and I won't be the bottleneck because I'm managing like 10 hats, like I've been doing so far. So that would be the goal. When I have that, then I'll be like a photography ninja, just going everywhere, taking tons of pictures.
Okay, that's a nice ending statement.
Yeah.
Unless is there anything else?
I think that's good. Yeah.
Then I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
For your nice talk.
Yeah.
And thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure.